Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the first ever Tuesday night boxing edition of The Grueling Truth. We'll be here every Tuesday night, same time, 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. We have some great guests lined up, not just tonight. We have Donnie Lalonde, former light heavyweight champion of the world, will be next week. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster, and I would like to welcome in my co-host for tonight's show, Joe Rodriguez.
Hey, Mike, great to be here and really looking forward to the show and the upcoming weeks.
We have a very special guest tonight. This man is a former two-time heavyweight champion of the world. Everybody, please help me welcome to the Grueling Truth, Terrible Tim Witherspoon. How you doing tonight, Tim?
Everything's good. Bright and ready to go.
All right. Well, let's get started. Okay. You grew up in Philadelphia in the 60s and 70s. What was your life like growing up in Philadelphia?
What was it like? What was it like to grow up in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I know you had a lot of brothers and sisters also, didn't you?
Yeah, I had five brothers, three sisters. It was rough. Let me see. I had a big family. I really was sheltered from a lot of like gang stuff and a lot of violence, even though, you know, it was all around. That was the way of life for us, the way we lived. That was the way we lived. And, and as years went on, you know, we learned a lot of different things. It was a multicultural area where I grew up in, Jewish, Italian, Irish, and the Latin was a Spanish, had moved in a little later, and blacks. All around in the same South Philadelphia, so it was pretty unique.
Hey, champ, really happy to talk to you. Who was your biggest influence growing up in Philly?
Influence. There was a lot of influences around, but the biggest, I would say a guy by the name of Tommy Wade, who mentored us ever since we were little kids to play football, baseball every week. He worked in NBC in New York, but he's from Philly, and his parents lived on the same, like, three doors away, and he's a church-going guy, you know, and I was into the church, and a lot of my friends, my brothers, you know, and we would play baseball since I was little up until college. Well, anyway, he was grooming us. I was a tight end, made all city, Philadelphia, then I went to college. But he was grooming us to be professional baseball and football players. My father, he was around, but this guy really took, you know, he took the space that my father was supposed to. So his name was Tommy Wade. He passed away. He was really an influence for me and my brothers and a couple of other kids in different families around the neighborhood. And everybody liked him.
Well, you talked about your football a little bit. You went to Lincoln University. You were a starting tight end, I believe, as a freshman. What made you decide after a successful freshman season to leave college?
I went to Lincoln University. College was rebuilding. It was rebuilding the sports and stuff, and I was trying to fit in. Me and my friend, my childhood friend Keith Davis, who I grew up with, he won all Pennsylvania, and I was just all Philadelphia. He was a tackle, and we both went to the same college because of our marks wasn't the scores and stuff wasn't high enough, so we had to go to a smaller college then, and so. I got hurt in college one game, and I lost a lot of interest Before the season started, you know, the coaches had advised us to take phys ed as a major, and we did look out for us. But that was kind of odd. And really, my head wasn't geared up to, like, go through college. And I realized it was a mistake down the line that I had a free scholarship and I should have used it. So real quick, you know, I got hurt. And then when I went home, one of my buddies was fighting. And that's what got me into that, to the boxing.
Oh, so tell us about that. So you, one of your buddies started boxing, and that's what piqued your interest?
Well, a lot of guys in the neighborhood were boxing. But, you know, my uncles used to box on the corner. They used to box on the corner. You know, I had about six uncles, big uncles, like 280. They wasn't really tall, but they were heavy and wide. And nobody messed with them, you know. But in the neighborhood, there was other bad people too. But they didn't, you know, they didn't mess with them. They used to body box. And the boxing atmosphere was in Philly, South Philly. Everybody used to body box, you know, and all that type of thing. So I got into it. And, wow, here I am today talking to you guys.
Yeah, highlight of your career.
Yeah, that's
all right.
You talked about
that a little bit. I know your amateur career was only about six or seven fights long.
Yeah,
I think probably the biggest name you fought in your amateur career was Marvis Frazier. Maybe tell us a little bit about your amateur career.
Well, you know, my daughter. I started when I came home. When I came home and started boxing. Oh, see, my daughter took me. I'm sorry, everybody.
That's all right.
Wait a minute. Okay, now all right. I had to get a apple juice. Sorry, guys.
That's okay.
I'm ready. I'm back now. That's my English daughter.
That's all right. We've all got kids, so we know how that can be.
Well, she asked me for a juice. She asked me for a juice. The juice that she thought she put in the refrigerator, and she didn't. She put it in the front room. I'm up here in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, training kids like 4 days a week. So that's where I'm at right now, in like a training camp atmosphere. And we got some real good products, and I'll tell you about them later. So you was asking me about my amateur career. I had a trainer that, you know, most young people, when they get into the game, they don't really know who's a good trainer, who's not. They just get in and just keep training and win the fight. So I got with a trainer that really was, to me, wasn't a good trainer, and later on I found out he wasn't, but I still fought. He put me in my first fight with a six or five time Golden Glove guy, and I only had boxing training for 3 months. You know, I got pretty banged around, but I survived. It was cool. But then I didn't fight after that. I got in shape, and I won like 3-4 in a row. And then I put more. I won 5 in a row. Then I lost to Marvin Frazier, the son of Joe Frazier. I lost to him, and you know, the talk was around the city and everybody said this new guy, this new boxer, Tim Witherspoon, just take a look at him. And, you know, I went with some people that financially helped me and just pushed me. Just like Tyson had his people, his two managers, I had a guy named Mark Stewart that was pushing me the same way. And some things happened along the way, which caused us to get sold to Don King. You know, so we was with Mark Stewart, and he was getting us fights, me and my brother Anthony. I think I might be going a little bit too far, but I was an amateur, and right after I fought Mark Stewart, people knew. They said, who is this guy? When he lost to Marvin Frazier, but we know he's good, something must be. I had that trainer, and I got a new trainer. Things changed for me. So I started winning when I turned pro. I won my first, 14 fights, but the fights were easier when I got another trainer. So, you know, that's what young people don't realize. You know, who's a good trainer, who's not. And
was that around the time you got with Slim Jim Robinson?
Yeah, exactly. When I'm with this guy named Clarence Booker, we was training, you know, and I would notice I was getting hit, you know, and then I tried to not get hit with some of the stuff that that I already knew, you know, try to get out of the way of the punches. And then when I saw other trainers, I said, there's a little bit something different over here, you know. And then what really put the icing on the cake is when I found out that Larry Holmes, when I was a young guy, wanted me in the boxing game. He wanted me to spar with me. Heard a lot about me, and wanted me to had a salary of maybe $800 to $1,000, and the trainer never told me. He never told
wow.
me that Larry Holmes wanted to, yeah. And so this is when I realized that he wanted me to go out and into the world of boxing to find somebody better than him, or find out he wanted to keep me locked in. And that was one of my first lessons, you know, in the boxing game. He held me back, didn't tell me. And when I found out later, I was really upset. But it worked out in the long run. I went on to fight him. I went with Don King, and I went on to fight him. But I would have been his sparring partner first. And I'm glad it didn't go that way. He didn't want people to know. This trainer didn't want other people to know that he didn't want me to realize there was other trainers out there that was really good. And he tried to keep the cap on the bottle as long as he could, but eventually he probably knew I was going to find out anyway.
Yeah.
Clarence Booker.
Well, you talk a little bit. You became a sparring partner for Muhammad Ali. In preparation for the Holmes fight. I mean, how did you get that job, and what was that like?
Well, you know, when I left Clarence Booker, I went up to the mountains with a light heavyweight named Matthew Saab Muhammad. And I was training with him for a couple of his fights. And then Muhammad Ali, it was his training camp up in Deer Lake. He came by one day just seeing what was going on, and he noticed we was in there. And he said, hey, I'm going to come back and fight. He's going to fight Larry Holmes. And he said, hey, I would like for you to be my sparring partner. And he said that to me. And then I think he stayed at the camp a couple of days, and he left. And then we were still at the camp when he came back. And then he started training. So it was Saab Muhammad. Eddie Mustafa. Saab Muhammad left. God bless him. He just passed away, one of the greatest light heavyweights in our era. Matthew Franklin, they called him.
Yep.
Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, who was Eddie Gregory, came up to camp. We got a job with him. So Ali came back up to camp, and that's when I started boxing with him. But the thing is that, my whole life and the way things have been going, I'm just talking about some things, but I have a book out. And the book got canceled. It was called Terrible Times. And I can't reveal everything, but for what I'm saying so far, it's really not telling the whole big story, but giving everybody a feeling of a little bit about me. But the book Terrible Times, I had to discontinue it. These people from England was writing it, writing a book. And then when somebody offered me a movie deal, and I told the people in England that somebody offered me a movie deal, but I didn't want them to have anything to do with it. And I think they got upset with it. They rushed the book, and it got messed up, and I had to cancel it. And now me and my cousin, Murad Zayed, is writing the book over again. And I got to be limited to what I say. But what I said so far is really not a whole lot, so... We might get to some issues where I won't talk about it. And that's good. Then the people can one day get the book, you know. But we still have enough to talk about anyway that we don't want to hurt what I got to say in the book, right?
No, of course.
Sounds good to me.
Right.
Actually, I tried to get the book the other day, and it said it was discontinued.
Oh,
well.
Why didn't you ask me? Why didn't you ask me about the book? I got copies of the book, and I got copies. They sent me copies, and I didn't even read them. Then they sent my cousin an electrical copy, and then he read some, and then when I read it, I said, "Whoa!" So I think that I said, "Whoa, man, this ain't really this different issues, different situation is all twisted up." I think they rushed it, you know, and we canceled it, but now we're gonna write it Philly style. It was an English guy with English terms and English verbs and adverbs, whatever you want to say. And now it's going to be more American. And I didn't know. I didn't want the book. In the beginning, I didn't want a book because a lot of serious things was in it. And so this guy named Kevin kept saying, come on, you can do the book, this guy in England. I kept saying, no, too many serious people, too many things we've got to talk about. And he convinced me, he said, well, these people in Indonesia, they will take care of the book thing. And that's how it really got started. But I wasn't really interested in doing a book for some reason. I don't know. I do know, but right now, you know. So that's what happened. That's what's been going on in the last, I would say, 3 years, I think. And we just canceled it. And so now we're going to start. The new book, the new name of the new book is going to be The Third Man. So we've been rewriting the book, and we're going to give the people the real story of the Philadelphia area and the heavyweight champ. I'm the third man to win the heavyweight championship in the whole world. And a lot of people in my own city don't even know it. I'm the third man.
Roy
Patterson. Yeah, go ahead. Cut me off anytime.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was waiting. Oh,
it was Floyd Patterson, Muhammad
Floyd
Ali,
Patterson,
and you.
Muhammad Ali, and Nate, this show, I'm ready. Yeah, you got a question, right?
Hey,
why did you cut me off?
I'm sorry, champ. Don't be coming to Indiana. You don't have my address anyways.
No, I said, why didn't you cut me off?
I don't want to cut you off. I want to let you talk.
Go ahead.
I just want to let people know, just in case they're just tuning in, we're on The Grueling Truth. We're interviewing former two-time heavyweight champion Tim Witherspoon. Joe, you got a question?
Yeah, champ, you started talking about, getting into the game and sparring. Let's jump a little bit ahead because it was pretty early in your career where you got the chance to fight Larry Holmes. So tell me, what was it like? What were your feelings going into the fight? And forgive me if this is a dumb question, but did you expect to win that fight?
No. That's a good question. I didn't, because who was this young man, who's this young guy coming out of nowhere, just rising to the top, and who he's going to dethrone the great Larry Holmes at that time? No, I don't think that was going to happen. So, he said a lot of nasty things to me before the fight, and I think he was trying to intimidate me, and it didn't work. It was a great fight. I mean, in the ninth round, I didn't know where I was. I was like, when I hit him and hurt him, I think I was on the cloud somewhere because all I heard was the last bell ring. And, I knew some of the stuff I did, and I looked later on in the video. I said, wow, because that ninth round, I had him hurt. And I think the inexperience got the best of me. I just started rushing everything instead of taking my time. I only had, 14? It was 14 fights. So I was in another world. But all the stuff that the drama that added up to the fight, I sucked it in and learned and took it in, and I'm here today. I mean, it was a good, great experience, and I'm blessed to be a part of that experience. I'm like, wow. When you look back on it, you say, wow, it didn't have to be me. It could have been
my brother. It could have been somebody else, but it was me.
Well, champ, your honesty is really refreshing because I asked you if you expected to win, but there was watching that fight.
Oh, wait a minute. So I did all that stuff. Oh yeah, I did tell you. I did tell you.
No, but
really
but watching that fight again, you may not have expected to win before you got in there, but there was some point where it was obvious you decided that, hey, I'm going to win this fight. When was that? Or was there a moment you remember?
Well, in the fight, I knew it. I know that I felt like I was winning. In the fight, I knew that I was the victor, but I was putting my hand up after the fight. You know, I put my hands up, but I didn't really expect to win. When they said Larry Holmes, I said, okay, well, it's over. I said, well, okay. And I even, if you watch my interview after the fight, I said, yeah, he's only holding the title just for me because I'm going to get it. You know what I'm saying? If you watch the end, did you watch the end of the interview?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how confident I felt at that time. Only if I would have had techniques of training like Holyfield, and I don't know how Tyson got this strong, and I don't know how Holyfield extremely strong, but the methods that they use to get boxers in shape nowadays are more advanced. Like when I came in, it was you know, when I 79, they were doing stuff, but you know, everybody was living up to the tradition, the boxing tradition, just chopping wood and just, you know, doing that. And then I think over in Eastern European, they were doing other stuff, like all the stuff that we doing today. They were doing all the, you know, and they were experimenting that time. So I wish I did all that stuff that Holyfield was doing with weights. And all we did was chop wood, run, jump rope, hit the bags, and, you know, that basic stuff. And then we heard the Olympic kids started doing this other stuff. And now today they call it sports medicine. And I believe if I was motivated to participate in that, I think that I would have went a little bit further, you know? So
that's all right, champ. It looks like we got a caller on the line. Caller, are you there? Caller?
Mike, am I on?
Yeah, you're on. Is this Dave?
This is Dave.
How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing good. Kim, great to talk with you, and you know, it's an honor. I, you know, followed your career with great interest and was just curious.
Thank you.
You know, looking back at your career, what sticks out to you the most, and what are you the most proud of and feel the best about? Looking back,
the proud. That is a good question. Something that makes me want to think. What sticks out? What makes me proud? Well, just the thing. If I'm gonna answer this correctly, what have I benefited? What sticks out? What the best thing? Say that again. What do you want me to say? Hello?
I think he's asking you what would be the highlight of your career. What are you most proud of? Was it winning the title, beating Frank Bruno in England?
There's so many different. I didn't expect to go that far. I didn't expect to be a champ of the world. You know, and a lot of different events. I'm blessed to be a part of. I really feel I appreciate it even being. I mean, I just walked out. I just wake up one morning and I'm heavyweight champ of the world. I mean, I worked hard. It happened so fast, but I didn't take advantage of it. So there's a lot of different events: the Brutal fight, the Larry Holmes fight. Here I am coming out of nowhere. I'm fighting the champion of the world in 3 years after just becoming an amateur. That's 4.5 years. I'm fighting the heavyweight champ of the world. Things move really fast. I'm with Don King. I'm hanging out with the Jacksons. Jermaine Jackson and them, when they try to start do the victory tour with Don King, I was around them all the time, you know. And a lot of different stars. And, hey, I'm like, whoa. You know, I look back at it, I really didn't take advantage of a lot of them. We just moved too fast. I felt like I couldn't even take advantage of some of these. And now I look back and I say, wow, I could have really been took advantage. But I feel good that, hey, I went through it. I met a lot of people. I'm still being interviewed. So I did something pretty good.
Well, you certainly did. I mean, not only you had a great career, you won the title twice, one of the very few to have done that. You mentioned Don King several times. I know you had a long,
yeah,
checkered relationship with him. Did the issues you had with Don King, did it take away from the enjoyment of winning the title?
Yes, it did. It did. You know, I thought the boxing game was, I don't know why I thought it that way. Being with Mark Stewart, my first manager, I knew I was going to get taken care of. But when they got in trouble at the summer of Don King, I didn't volunteer. But when all that happened and I went with them, you know, I just had to deal with things, you know, learn from there. You know, we was left out in the cold, but you asked me that, what did you ask me?
That did it take away all the issues you had with Don King, did it take away from the enjoyment you had of winning the title?
Yeah, especially the money part. I mean, I'm not all money crazy thing, but being able to negotiate a proper contract, you know, maybe put that contract up on the wall, on the plaque, and say, this is what I did. You know, that was taken from me. You know, we wasn't able to negotiate. You know, really, you know, at one time I couldn't bring a lawyer in. But you know, when I fought against Don King, nobody would come and help. You know, everybody would talk about him that he's this, he's a crap, he's this and that. But then nobody really helped. It was just us guys. Everybody would give their opinion, oh, he's a piece of this, he's a piece of that. I found out there was other guys doing it too, as bad as Don. And now today, this is how the relationship is. I seen him about a year ago, and we was at this fight. I was in this guy's corner who was undefeated, and David, he was having a problem with Don. You know, he was in Vegas, and when I walked into the room, he walked over. He was walking in the same direction, and I said, what's up, Don? He said, hey, what's up, Tim? And he said, oh, man, I love you, man. And I said, I love you back. Like that, I gave him a hug. But what I do, I don't think that I would rush to him to do anything. So what I'm trying to say is when we was up there saying Don King ain't this, Don King was that, all the people with the money and the networks, some of them made fun of us, some of them, didn't treat us because that was happening. I mean, yeah, well, is Don to blame? I think so. But the bottom line, everybody was talking and nobody helped. So I'm going to treat it like, okay, he did what he did. We, you know, these people suffered in this whole ordeal. But, you know, he'll pay for what he do, but didn't nobody help us. Everybody's going around, he's crap, he's this, he's that, and other people stealing, and they was talking about that. And Don, he ran out. So I'm like this, do I call him every day? No. Do I look for him or do I look on the internet for him? No. But when I see him, yeah, I'm going to say hi to him. Because I used to see them same guys suing each other and then going in the bar and drinking and joking. But all the boxers get treated a certain way. Yeah, I've seen them guys have to sue each other in the bar, drinking and laughing about it.
Hey, Tim, real quick, I need to let everybody know our half-hour live show's almost over, but at the top of the hour at midnight Eastern time, you can get the rest of the interview, which is another 15 minutes on archive time. Sorry to interrupt you, champ. Go ahead.
No problem. I just wanted to say, hey, look, would I do business with Don? Yeah, I would do business. Would I make sure everything would be the dots and the Q's and everything? Yeah, I would get a lawyer and all that. But you know, at least I, people know to try to protect myself and try to help other people all that stuff was going on, you know. So they could still be in the back, sitting behind the man back, how come he ain't get killed or how can I be cool with him? I just left it alone because if I keep on and Don King this, Don King that, he's going to win. So I got to let it go. All right, you hit me in the face, I punched you back. His hurt maybe a little bit more. But I'm going to leave it alone because I got to go on with my life.
Hey, champ, one of the biggest wins of your career is when you went to England and beat Frank Bruno. What was that like?
That was beautiful. That was beautiful. I go over there a lot. Our own American commentators didn't even think they should have stopped the fight. They was expecting me to lose. I was in okay shape. You know, even after the fight, they were saying they shouldn't have stopped the fight. My own commentators, you know. But we went over there. The people, they treated us good. We had a good training quarters. I mean, but everybody expected me to lose, you know. A lot of people, I don't know really about the statistics, but a lot of people in America perhaps won't lose. And it's crazy. If you put the tape on, Larry Merchant says, I don't think they should have stopped the fight. And I was like, what fight is he watching? The people over there were good. It was 50,000 people, 50,000 people in the stadiums throwing stuff at us, trying to get us, and it's cool. We made out all right.
Well, you talked a little bit about England. Don, you talked a little bit about Don King. Promoters, pretty much all of them are kind of the same. Do you think there's any regulatory practices or anything that can be done to protect fighters from, you know, managers and promoters that are just out to make a buck off their skin? Do you think there's something more that can be done to protect the fighters?
Yeah, well, we've been trying to, when we sued them and stuff, we've been trying to, you know, get as many people as we can on one side to try to fight against not only what he was doing, anybody else was doing. We, you know, Paul Johnson is a guy up here in Minnesota. I think Paul Johnson is in Minnesota, right? He's like the head of one of these unions, and we're trying to get fund. We're trying to, you know, get money to start the union and get it moving. We're trying to contact Mayweather, several other people to try to get it started. You know, Mayweather and them, they donate money to different funds and all that, but this guy been trying since we took Don King to court. All we back then, 25, 30 years ago, his heart been in trying to get some legislation upgraded so we can, the boxers today are making money, but get it upgraded so we really can see what the boxers are really you know, progressing in financially or you know, managerially, like the paperwork and stuff, you know, make sure their attorneys, make sure there's life after boxing, make sure that we get take care of, just like football, baseball players, you know. So this is what he was trying to do. His name is Paul Johnson.
Yep, that sounds great, because something definitely needs to be done about that. You talked about the training boxers do now with the weights and everything else compared to when you were a fighter back in the 80s. What's your opinion of the Klitschko brothers as fighters?
I think they're great. They're a great pair of guys. I think that they lit up the skies when they came into the on the scene. I wish they would have came on the scene when me, Bone Crusher, Tony Tubbs, Tony Tucker, Tyson. Now, well, Tyson was a little bit behind us, and us guys was coming, but it wasn't their time. They came after us where the pickings and the hardest of the fighters and contenders were not
really strong guys. I mean, and they were in shape. That's their greatest asset. Those guys were professionals in fitness, and they would be in phenomenal shape. They knew how to get in shape, and I think that was their greatest asset, not their boxing skills, because they have a good jab. They have a nice European style, the way the Europeans fight with their straight up and down, but they don't have an inside fight game. The younger one doesn't have none at all, but the big one will fight you inside. He will fight you. He's more tougher, if you ask me. But yeah, the younger one, all he does is grab, because nobody taught him how to fight inside. It makes the fight boring, and he just have guys out on the jab, boom, boom, right hand. You don't see no body shots. So boxing is an art, and you want to see everything, left hooks, slipping, rolling, defense, offense. You just don't want to see – it's boring when you just have just a jab, jab, right hand, and grab. There's more to do than grab. If you grab, you grab for a split second, then fire, boom, boom. They don't do that. But their accomplishments, you got to give, take your hat out to them. They did bring boxing, like – everybody was watching the Klitschko brothers, which one would fight. It was very interesting. You got to give your hat off to them. But I think during the times of when I was boxing, they would have got an Anders Eklund.
I think they're happy that a guy like you is not, or you specifically, is not around today, because with your size and your ability, they would have not wanted to face
you.
I need the money.
Should I come out of retirement?
Hey, I'll promote you. I won't screw you over either. I just need 5%.
Well, hey, set it up.
Bring me to my next question. You sound great. What's happening with Tim Witherspoon today? What are you doing today? I know you're training fighters. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'm up in Hazleton, not too far from Larry Holmes' town, training a lot of Dominican Republic people reside up here, and I've been up here for about 6 months training these guys. There's a lot of talent up here. I was really impressed. I'm a good teacher, so I'm getting them ready fast. Six months ago, there was nothing here, and now we got a 119-pound junior. Novice, a Golden Glove winner, and we got his brother, who's light heavyweight. They all fighting this weekend, but we got a lot of talent. We got a 305-pound Dominican young kid named Bronco. He can punch. We got to get him ready. We're not going to push these guys fast. We're going to take our time and teach them. And we know what I'm saying. The education, I'm going to push them fast. And because I know what I'm doing, and we're going to take it slow when they got to fight. So I'm up here 4 days a week. Me and my daughter come up here, and I train these guys, and I train other fighters. All this welterweights. There's all different weight classes there. So, so I'm up here 4 days a week. I'm doing a play called The Backstabbers. We try to get Larry Holmes involved with it. In Philadelphia, this guy James Brooks, they call him Hollywood, is producing a play called The Backstabbers, and I play a part in there. We're waiting for that to materialize, to see some people come sponsor it, and we take it on tour. There's different singers involved, like Motown singers, old timers that's involved with the play, and I think that's something that's really fun, because I get to practice like I'm an actor or something, and I go there every Tuesday in Philadelphia. But this Tuesday I had to cancel because our guys up here are fighting in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. So I've been going back and forth to England, doing training boxers, and I've been back and forth, man. I know pretty much about what's going on over there with the boxing too. I've been in all the gyms. So, I decided to come home and try to form some type of base here, because I've been over in England for like 4 months at a time, going back and forth and trying to find out what's wrong with boxing and try to get involved with boxing over there. I'm surprised that I don't get no work in the United States. I mean, I can probably get it if I start going to gyms and, but, you know, who would want a two-time heavyweight champion to train their boxer? And I'm thinking maybe it's because he knows too much. He might not only tell him how to fight, he might try to help
him. Tell him what's going on.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm thinking it's hard to get it. I'm saying there's guys that don't really never fought and they got jobs. They got jobs with big boxers. I don't want to call no names, but there's guys that never fought and there's guys with only two amateur fights. And they're with champions right now, making good money. And aftercare. We need aftercare for the fallen fellas like us. We finish boxing. There's no aftercare. So that's one thing we're trying to push to, aftercare.
Well, we only got about 3 minutes left, so we got to ask you the question. We'll ask everybody on our show between now and May 2nd. What's your prediction on the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight?
Oh, okay. Okay, real quick. I think that I'm gonna start with Floyd first. I think that his boxing skills are really astounding. They're really good and everything. I think his defense really gets him through a lot of fights. Him being slick, Pacquiao was majority offense, no defense at all. Freddie Roach, I think he's carrying Freddie Roach. My opinion is he's making Freddie Roach's name big by winning all these fights, because
yeah.
I didn't see nothing change with Pacquiao. I see nothing change with Pacquiao. He's just him throwing punches. He's no defense he has. So I like both of them guys. I really respect them. I'm a boxer, and I feel I'm a big brother to them. But I feel that Floyd will, both of them guys are going to get ready for the fight of their life. You want to have a good fight. If Floyd don't run, you should see a good fight. But I predict him to win by points, but he's not Pacquiao out because of his defense. He's always offense. If you look at him, he don't block punches at all. He don't throw punches and don't have no defensive mechanism. His defensive mechanism is trying to throw a lot of punches. He don't protect himself that much. So I'm looking for Floyd to win, but one thing, Floyd, you better watch out. Harry Holmes, the same thing you said about Rocky Marciano, can't get Josh back. Floyd is then saying stuff about Ali. And I think that could be detrimental. People that like him are turning on him because if you read, he's saying that they're not better than him. Have you guys reading on the internet? So I think it could fight off. I think he better retract because I felt kind of upset about that, even though I like him. But that's one thing that could cause him. He better be like,
I'll tell you, love Ali.
We're running out of time. We would love to have you back anytime, champ. It's been a great interview.
Yeah.
I mean, the times I've talked to you this past week been nothing but a pleasure. I mean, not just a heavyweight champ. You're a really humble individual, which is hard to find with people that, you know, have achieved great things in life. So
Thank you very much. Anytime
you can come on, we would love to have you on. I'm sure Joe agrees with me.
Absolutely. It's a real pleasure. And champ, I have to make a quick admission. When I first saw the Holmes fight, I thought you lost. And when I saw it again, I said,
You're the first person in my whole life said that.
He changed his mind, though, after he watched it. So.
But, yeah, I did. When I watched it again, I said, wow. So I was wrong, champ.
Tim,
once again, we're about to get cut off. I just want to thank you again. Anytime you want to come
on,
you're more than welcome.
Thank you very much, guys. God bless you.
Same to
you.
You
too,
best,
Tim.
Man.
I'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. See ya. All right, guys. Remember, next Tuesday night, we will have another episode of The Grueling Truth Boxing, which will be Donnie Lalonde, former light heavyweight champion of the world. Tomorrow night, you can listen to The Grueling Truth Football Show with me and my co-host, Matt Andrew Scavage. We'll be talking to top 10 wide receivers in NFL history. And then Thursday, we will have a special draft preview with Todd Stussi, who was a guest earlier this year. His draft app's coming out.